This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:36 in the morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana and Xiaoning on Friday, the 7th of October, a rather overcast Friday looking outside our window. We're turning our attention, though, to something the
opposite end of green.
The antithesis of like green and, yes, emissions control. We're looking at oil markets. So this week, OPEC Plus members agreed to impose production cuts of up to 2 million barrels per day in a bid to keep oil prices elevated. This is equivalent to 2% of global supply and is the most significant round of cuts since the onset of the pandemic in 2020.
The decision to cut production is also seen as a rebuke to the US, which had taken pains to court Saudi Arabia this summer in an effort to persuade oil producers to alleviate supply tightness and drive down fuel prices that were feeding inflation. In response to the announcement, the Biden administration accused OPEC Plus of siding with Russia at a time when maintaining energy supply was of paramount importance. The OPEC Plus move came soon after the EU announced it had agreed on a price cap mechanism on the exports of Russian oil.
So what implications will these decisions have on the oil markets moving forward? Joining us to explain the dynamics at play is Saleh Yilmaz, analyst with Bloomberg Intelligence. Good morning, Saleh. Thanks for joining us today. Now, walk us through the rationale for OPEC Plus to cut production by 2 million barrels per day, despite current output already being below target levels.
So I think the main driver, undoubtedly, is the recent fall in prices that we saw in the last couple of months. Obviously, what we always hear OPEC say is that they're very much focused on the balance, the supply-demand balance in the market. But in this case, I think it's pretty clear that they really wanted to limit the downside on prices, given the recent fall that we saw. So I think what they are going for and what they're aiming is essentially a floor for prices, for Brent price at around $90 a barrel, which I think they might succeed in. But on top of this, what they're saying is that they are really trying to preempt the drop in demand that's likely to happen due to a recession that's widely anticipated now. And another reason is that they are saying that they really want to lure investors back into the sector, make it more attractive for them. Because as you know, one of the main reasons that we are in the situation that we are in the energy sector is due to years of underinvestment. And this is arguably more important now than ever that we have more capital being redirected into the sector because we are still expecting demand to continue to grow. And to match that, we will need higher supply. And for that, we really need the sector to become attractive again. And that's one of the reasons that the group is saying is behind this output cut that we're seeing. So they're trying to give a little bit of certainty, a little guidance for investors, at least for the next year.
Well, the White House has accused OPEC of aligning with Russia and damaging the global economy. So tell us, how do these oil cuts benefit Russia?
Not only Russia, but for many OPEC member nations, actually, this cut by the group is not actually going to mean that much in terms of their production level, because many of these OPEC plus nations are actually producing way below their target. And that's due to, I mean, in Russia's case, due to sanctions and self-sanctioning, and in many other cases, due to years of underinvestment in these countries. So in the case of Russia, they are producing below their target. So this cut won't actually change much for them, but at the same time, it will probably prop up prices. I mean, we know since the beginning of this week, just leading up to the meeting, just the rumors of an output cut was enough to increase prices by almost 10%. So increasing prices obviously helps increase the revenues for the OPEC plus member nations, including Russia. And I think importantly, it also shows the group's discontent with the idea of a price cap, because this would essentially set a bad precedent for OPEC members too, because you could essentially see this as a cartel, if you will, of oil buyers against the cartel of the oil exporters, that is OPEC and OPEC Plus. So I think generally the group is very much against that idea that's being floated to be set against Russia in this instance.
Let's get into that price cap mechanism, which the G7 and now the EU have reportedly agreed on against Russian oil. How would this work?
The price cap is supposed to work by essentially keeping a cap on prices that is paid to purchase Russian oil at a certain level. And that level is, I mean, we still don't know what that level would be, but it would probably be somewhere above the production cost for that country, so that it still kind of makes sense for them to be selling it, but lower than the global prices. And the idea is that buyers of, in this case, Russian oil, would only be able to access European insurance and financial services for those oil purchases only if they adhere to that cap. And if they don't, then insurance coverage would essentially be blocked for them for deliveries. And it's important to remember, obviously, I think close to 95% of the world's oil tanker fleet is covered by the International Group of Protection and Indemnity Clubs that is based in London and some based in Europe. So obviously a big majority of tanker fleet is insured in these regions. So blocking insurance is on paper supposed to be very effective. But the risk here is that the country could just say that they are stopping selling oil to the countries that adhere to the cap. And this was, again, I mean, repeated by Alexander Novak, the energy minister of Russia, at one of the side interviews he did with Bloomberg TV in Vienna. So I think the risk very much here is that they just stop selling to a lot of the buyers. And that obviously means a much bigger disruption to oil flows and a much bigger reduction in oil supplies that would increase global oil prices by a significant amount in that case.
Okay, let's talk about OPEC, because the U.S. has threatened to introduce legislation that will reduce OPEC's control over energy prices. What would a so-called NOPEC legislation look like, and how likely is that to materialize?
So, I mean, this is not the first time we hear about NOPEC. I mean, multiple times historically it has come up, and the Congress in the U.S. seems to be in favor of it, but it looks to us still pretty unlikely to go anywhere. Essentially, the NOPEC bill would change the U.S. antitrust law to revoke the sovereign immunity that has been protecting the OPEC, in this instance, OPEC Plus members and their national oil companies. So they could then be able to sue OPEC Plus or its members in federal courts. But, I mean, there has always been significant resistance from oil industry groups to this. So it still appears quite unlikely. And I think it probably, I mean, understandably, there's a lot of anger in the US at the moment, but kind of changing policy and changing the bills at a time of anger is probably not the best course of action from what we hear.
What other options does the US have to influence oil prices? Will we see more reserves being released from its stockpile?
Yes, I think so. That would be the first thought that I have. That's always an option. As you know, they have been releasing from the strategic reserves, which are supposed to come to an end around November, but it's not clear to us if it will. They could continue with these. But it's important to remember, as they have been releasing from the reserves, the levels of these reserves have actually come down to their lowest level since 1984, the current level. And obviously, this is essentially like an inventory and a finite amount. So it is very hard to fight flows of oil with and a finite amount of inventories, essentially. And at the same time, it's important to remember for most of this year, we had the commercial inventories still drawing despite all this extra amount of stocks that we had released into the market. So it's just not a great idea to be depleting strategic reserves at a time when we are expecting a multi-year deficit in the oil market.
So Sally, what other factors could influence the trajectory of oil markets in the remaining of the year and also, of course, in 2023?
So we think the stage is very much set for higher prices for the rest of this year and very likely early next year. With this meeting, I think what OPEC Plus has done is set a floor for Brent prices at around $90 a barrel. They have shown that they are ready to adjust supply against lower demand. I mean, there has been a lot of fear against recession and that the impact that it might have on oil demand. But on top of these, we should not forget, as I mentioned earlier, the potential disruption risk from Russia come December 5. So that's when the sixth sanctions package by the EU is expected to come into effect, and potentially a price cap, as we've been mentioning. So this brings potentially more supply loss to the market. Obviously, on the demand side, China reopening will be a huge lever. There's still a huge uncertainty on the timing. But when it does eventually happen, this is obviously going to be a notable boost to demand, especially in Europe, but everywhere in the world, really, given the higher natural gas prices. We do expect more gas to oil switching. So wherever possible, I think we will see countries, companies switch to liquids from natural gas just because it's cheaper to do so. But all in all, we still continue to expect a very tight physical oil market. And we think that three-digit prices are very much possible. And the stage is very much set for them before the end of the year.
Thanks very much for your time. That was Saleh Yilmaz, analyst with Bloomberg Intelligence, giving us his take on how he sees the oil markets unfolding towards the end of the year. Three-digit prices are still possible, something we'll be keeping an eye on. 7:48 in the morning, we're heading into some messages. When we come back, we'll be speaking to Firdaus Rosli, chief economist at Bank Islam Malaysia, on Budget 2023. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.